Isaac and Rebekah had two sons, Jacob and Esau. One of them was blessed, one of them cursed. I'd like for us to ask the question, if you had to choose one of these two men as your next door neighbor, which one would you prefer? Welcome to Probe. We're continuing our discussions on beginnings and belongings, conversations on the book of Genesis. My conversation partners are again Paul Dibdahl, Larry Vavirka, and I brewed that question up just for them. Which would you rather have as a neighbor, Jacob or Esau? Maybe we ought to start by just describing these two people as they're described in Genesis, their pluses and minuses. What kind of guy was Jacob?
Well, his name, I think, literally is what? He who grasps the heel?
Cheat would be a modern equivalent, yeah.
And that was a euphemism for someone who was dishonest. And Esau, also called Edom, I think. Mm-hmm. His name means he was red and hairy as well. So I wouldn't base who I wanted to live next to. I don't think I'd you don't want to stay away from someone who is too hairy.
Well, I think it would be nice if I could actually choose my neighbors. You know, I mean, go to the real estate office and say, look, this is the profile of the person I'd like to have live next door to me, and would you please make that a part of your selling point or advertising point? And only this sort of person. Usually when we attempt to do that, we're in trouble with fair housing acts, and that's not frowned on very well. So our neighbors choose us in some way by living next to us. So it is, I mean, you're setting up a straw kind of
all right,
problem in that sense.
Okay, let's take away from neighbor. Let's say had to be a friend of yours.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe teaching the school of theology with us.
So who are you attracted to more? The hairy jock who, you know, has all kinds of women and is athletic and goes out for sports in a big way and brags a lot? Or the sort of greasy, slime ball guy who sneaks around and cheats on everybody.
I'm going to avoid answering the question yet a bit longer.
What kind of friends do you pick? Huh?
I've asked students in class to do a character study, and they pick someone from a hero from the Old Testament. Actually, it's generally from Genesis. Jacob is one of them. I haven't given Esau as an example. But then I ask, would you want your child to marry someone like that? I don't think I would want my child to marry someone like my. I have two daughters. Wouldn't want them to marry someone like Jacob. I'm quite sure of that. And Esau would be a bit scary as well. But I'm drawn to Esau, though, as sort of the underdog.
Well, Esau, in the end, is an incredibly generous and magnanimous person.
He is the picture of God. Yep. When Jacob sees him, he says, to see your face is like seeing the face of God.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know that God is red and hairy as Esau was,
but there was
something in Esau's face there which was godlike.
Yeah.
So I do find myself drawn to the underdog, so to speak, the Leahs and the Esaus, the ones that we tend to skip over. And I think, that would be my answer maybe. Maybe I'd rather have Esau in the school of theology, or as a neighbor even.
There's a certain honesty about Esau that's, you know, sure, he's a bit wild, but there's a bit of honesty. And maybe a point we ought to make here is that when we look at the characters of the Bible, that often when God chooses a person, that's not necessarily based upon absolute moral worth.
Oh, yeah, I think that's the case.
And when you come to choosing a king for Israel, for example, I think Saul really gets the short end of the stick very quickly. Mm-hmm. David did all kinds of wild stuff, but the Lord stayed with him. And if I had to vote for someone for king, I'd vote for Jonathan.
Mm-hmm.
Not for Saul or for David. Mm-hmm. But that's the Lord chooses things based on his own criteria.
Well, Jacob, even after that interchange, after he's been with Laban, after he's gotten married, he meets Esau. He's still deceptive after that. He says, I'll follow you, Esau, then turns and goes the other direction. I mean, good guy.
Now let's go a little closer attention to the actual example of the blessing and the deceptions. First of all, you have Jacob driving that hard bargain. Esau comes in famished, and Jacob says, well, give me your birthright, and I'll give you some of this mess of pottage. See? And Esau just shrugs, oh, I'm hungry. Go ahead, give it to me. See? Now, apparently, the birthright involves, in modern terms, spiritual leadership, but also the property,
mm-hmm.
also the headship of the family. So it's a fairly significant thing, but Esau was simply prepared to shrug.
He's a man who lives in the present. It's not. I mean, those are ethereal by and by things. Cross those bridges when we come to them.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, there's more important things, interesting things to deal with. One's hunger would probably take precedence.
Now, let's look at some parental characteristics here. Rebecca has picked Jacob as her favorite. Isaac has picked Esau, and that's in the biblical text. It's right there. The parents have chosen up sides. How would we evaluate Jacob's decision to give the birthright blessing to Esau? Now, maybe he didn't have a choice because Esau was the firstborn. But there is that decision on the part of Isaac.
There, you got it right. You said Jacob's decision.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Isaac's decision to bless Jacob. But the mother's decision, and she's the one who really forced Jacob, you could say, to tell lies.
And she says, let the curse fall on me. She realizes it's wrong, but I'll take whatever bad comes from it.
Yeah.
Let it happen to me. You go ahead and do what I say. Yeah.
Favorite child syndrome is really gooey stuff in family systems. I mean, it really, really is. And then you look at, again, the kind of moral and character shaping that the parent of influence has on this youngster. You wonder what kind of person Jacob would be in spite of his supplanting birth if he hadn't had a mom who, set truth aside in the way that she did.
Yeah. It raises all kinds of questions. Now, sometimes by portraying Esau as the big husky fellow, we have portrayed Jacob as kind of a little mousy guy, but that's not the case. If you go to Bethel, which is where he went as he was fleeing from home and Esau's intent to kill him, he called this a house of God, and he raised a pillar there. And if you look at the pillars, that's substantial stuff. You know, you're looking at a strong man. And when he comes to Laban's part of the world, and none of the other shepherds are going to help roll the stone away when Rachel comes with the sheep, Jacob does that single-handedly. So this is not some little pansy here. This is a huge guy with muscle. And add that to his deceptive brain, boy, you're asking for all kinds of trouble. Now, let's go to the story of meeting Rachel and Leah. This is another fascinating tale. What stands out for you in that particular story that is remarkable from our perspective?
Oh, yeah, it's just a soap opera, what happens there. Jealousy and favoritism and... I mean, the list could go on and on. I don't know where to start. Some stuff that it's even awkward to talk about on air, I think, is there in the story.
Well,
I don't know where you want us to start.
Well, I don't know. It's just amazing, for instance, that Jacob immediately is attracted to Rachel.
Uh-huh.
Laban intervenes, and of course, I've always puzzled how in the world he could sleep all night with Leah and not realize it until the morning. Apparently he'd had something stronger than water to drink. But Laban says, well, I'm sorry, you know, but you can have the next one too if you work another 7 years. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that the count is absolutely clear whether or not he got Rachel immediately.
Oh, I think
that's what I was wondering.
That he did.
It sounds like it.
Sounds like it.
This bridal, this daughter's bridal week, then we will give you the younger one also in return for another 7 years of work. So I think.
Yeah. And then, of course, he has apparently relations only with Rachel. She doesn't have any children. And then you go to Leah begins having children. Now, next week we'll talk about what happens when they get when Rachel gets desperate. Then she starts giving a handmaid. And so the score starts adding up. But if you want a nasty story of the hazards of polygamy, just read the story of Jacob and his children. It's really quite amazing.
Yeah, it has been interesting to me if you add up the, if you look at the 12 tribes of Israel, more of the tribes were contributed by Leah than by Rachel.
Yep.
And yet Rachel is the one that we tend to focus on as sort of, I don't know, the one, you know, the favored one.
Yeah.
But yet God opens her womb and she provides.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it would be, I don't know, our sympathies can come on both sides. You think of Rachel, she was the favored, but then her big sister comes in and cuts it away, and then her big sister, and they start to make fun of her, and it's a very complex story any way you look at it. There's one other thing I'd like to focus on in the story here, and I'd like to go back. It's the way providence works here. So I think this is something that is deeply rooted in the human psyche. Jacob cheated his father, and his father declared him blessed. When he discovered the deception, he did not overturn the blessing. Now, am I right in saying that if that were to happen with any of us, with our kids, would we simply say, well, I gave you the blessing, son. Sorry. You know, it's the way it has to stay. My guess is any one of us would say, if a child deceived us like that, say, I'm sorry, son. Mm-hmm. You just lost it. Mm-hmm. Now,
I wonder, though, in this is an oral culture.
Yep.
And once your word is spoken, then it's binding. It's like the document's signed, and this is something that's you can't go back on in some way.
Well, I think that same idea, though, Larry, it is deeply rooted when you get to the later stories of the Old Testament, the laws of the Medes and the Persians, for example, cannot be changed.
Mm-hmm.
An authority speaks, and I think that leads to, in many ways, the way we look at the Bible. And that becomes problematic then because, well, the Bible, if Isaac's word stays, then what about the words that come from God? And you get into all kinds of really troublesome stories. But our time is up. Next week, we will continue on to the rest of Jacob's story. My conversation partners will again be Paul and Larry. My thanks to Susan Michael, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening. For Probe, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194 or email us at probe@wwc.edu. Thanks for listening. We'll be here next week at this time with Probe.